No more wincing at the gas station.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. It's astounding how fast and how far the price of gasoline has fallen. This morning, it's below $2 a gallon on average nationwide. Mid-July, gas was $4.11. Of course, that's when oil was $145 a barrel. This morning, it's $50 a barrel. By the way, gas is cheapest in Missouri at $1.69. Alaska is still at $3 a gallon. As for Wall Street, bank stocks are dirt cheap, but no one's touching them until they find out about Citigroup. Rumors are flying that Citi might sell itself or look for a merger. The company denies that, but Citi's board is expected to meet today. Marketplace's Janet Babin reports from North Carolina Public Radio.
Back in the day, Citigroup was the largest bank in the U.S. Now it's down to number five. The bank's shares have sunk to their lowest level in more than a decade. Christopher Whalen of Institutional Risk Analytics says investors are worried that Citigroup will have to take more write-downs associated with bad mortgages and mortgage-backed securities.
What it comes down to is surprises. Everybody believes that somewhere on Citi's balance sheet, there is more subprime paper or collateralized debt obligations that have not been valued properly.
Whalen says Citi's CEO Vikram Pandit doesn't have enough experience as a banker and should step down. But the company's largest individual investor expressed confidence in Pandit this week and increased his stake in the bank. For its part, Citigroup says it has enough capital to stay independent. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
One share of Citigroup is worth $5 this morning. There are plenty of, I don't know if you'd say bargains, but cheap stocks out there. And so Wall Street's doing a bit of buying. The Dow is up 150 points, about 2%, to 7704. The NASDAQ has gained 33 so far. The S&P 500 is up 19. It's only at 772, though. In Asia, the markets closed with 3% gains. European shares are mixed so far. President Bush heads to Lima, Peru today. That's where countries from Asia have decided to hold their economic summit. This group is known as APEC. This will most likely be President Bush's last get-together with other world leaders. More now from Nancy Marshall-Genzer.
The White House wants APEC to sign on to the broad goals outlined at last weekend's G20 summit, like better regulation and more economic stimulus packages. But will the world listen?
President Bush won't have much influence there.
Sidney Weintraub is an economist at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
Now, be polite, but I think most of them know it doesn't matter what he says anymore.
Simon Johnson is a senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. He says the president should forget broad goals and focus instead on reassuring Asian countries who invest here.
This is where the economy is going. Particularly, this is how we're safeguarding investments that you and your citizens are making in the United States.
The president could deliver that message in one-on-one talks scheduled with the leaders of China, South Korea, Japan, and Russia. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Hollywood is struggling with the financial crisis fallout. So far this year, DVD sales are down 5 to 10%, depending on who you talk to. And most of that drop has come in the last month or two. Blu-ray discs might fall 25% short of sales projections for the year. Besides the obvious that people are spending less, a survey finds that consumers are still waiting to make sure Blu-ray will be the standard. You're listening to The Morning Report for Friday, November 21st on Marketplace.org. Kosher food this Thanksgiving could be quite a bit more expensive than last year. You can thank the country's largest supplier of kosher meat, Agra Processor. The company shut down this month after being busted earlier this year for hiring illegal immigrants. Here's Renita Jablonski.
Menachem Lubinsky is keeping a close eye on kosher food markets around the country in this week before Thanksgiving. He's editor-in-chief of KosherToday.com. Lubinsky says kosher families face higher grocery bills this holiday.
Kosher turkey today is about twice the cost of what it was a year ago.
Lubinsky says Agriprocessor had supplied about 40% of the nation's kosher turkeys. The company also produced about 60% of kosher beef. That's the real worry for Shimon Hildesheim. He owns a kosher butcher shop in Cleveland.
There's definitely a shortage. We can't get enough meat.
Hildesheim says the beef business is going to the birds.
They have to fill the void. If people are not going to eat meat, people are going to eat chicken.
The kosher meat shortage is expected to continue for several months. I'm Renita Jablonski for Marketplace.
Today, the watchdog group Public Citizen will ask a court to throw out a rule concerning hexavalent chromium. That's the carcinogen spotlighted in the movie Aaron Brockovich.
Everything the Jensens have had is proven reaction to exposure to hexavalent chromium. They have had
breast cysts, uterine cancer, Hodgkin's disease, immune deficiencies, asthma, chronic nosebleeds.
A million things could have caused those problems.
As we know now, it wasn't a million different things. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sam Eaton reports.
The fight to reduce workplace exposures to hexavalent chromium goes back a decade and a half. It eventually led to a court-ordered rule change. The problem, according to labor unions and Public Citizen, is that the new regulation is too lax. According to the government's own estimates, up to 5% of exposed workers will die of lung cancer. Public Citizen attorney Scott Nelson says asking the courts to overturn the rule now makes it much easier for the next administration to issue a new one.
It takes much more to change a rule that's already in existence than it does to consider a rule when a court has already held that the existing rule is unlawful.
Without that court order, Nelson says changing the chromium regs could take as long as a year. I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
By now, everyone knows the story of people who took out mortgages they couldn't afford. Now they can't make their payments, and banks are looking for ways to keep them in their homes. But the credit card industry is experiencing the same cycle, and it's looking for its own fix. Here's Stacey Vanek Smith.
Back in college, Dana Van Hove signed up for a credit card. Little did she know she would spend the next two decades paying it off.
I didn't feel like I was abusive with the card, but it snowballed into this huge monster of debt, which now at age 43, I just got it paid off.
Van Hove's debt ballooned to five figures, and she was being hounded by her credit card company. There's a lot of that going around. Americans owe more than $900 billion on their cards, and it's as big a problem for the credit card companies as it is for the debtors.
This is the greatest crisis period in the history of the American credit card industry.
Robert Manning is the author of Credit Card Nation. He says card companies got themselves into trouble the same way mortgage companies did. They started loosening their lending standards because they were packaging their debt and selling it to other investors.
So the big credit card issuers were looking for literally anybody with a pulse to offer them credit because they were going to pass that risk on to an investor.
And the credit card companies didn't worry that consumers wouldn't pay their bills because those consumers could always tap their home equity lines of credit. Until they couldn't. More than a million people will file for bankruptcy this year, with an average credit card debt of $50,000. Card companies have already seen default rates soar, and they're having to put money aside to cover defaults. Manning says that is making the credit crisis even worse.
This is extremely serious. It raises the question of where are banks going to raise the cash to loan to consumers.
To bring in cash, card companies are changing rules to allow consumers to make smaller payments. And under one pilot program, card companies are forgiving big chunks of debt for 50,000 cardholders. Dana Van Hove negotiated a settlement with her card company for about half of what she owed.
It's not like I spent all that money. Most of it was huge fees and huge penalties. I don't think I got away with anything.
But from now on, Van Hove says she'll stick to her debit card. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Out of all the layoffs in the financial industry so far, and the ones that might be coming, and there will be hundreds of thousands of people looking for work. So what's a banker to do? There's always Dubai, if you don't mind moving halfway around the world and 118-degree heat. But getting a job there isn't as easy as it was even a few months ago. Kelly McEvers has our story.
Last year, when the credit crunch began in earnest, the saying at financial firms was Dubai, Mumbai, Shanghai, or goodbye. Meaning if you wanted to keep your job, you had to be shipped off to one of these emerging markets. Now that things have gotten worse, people are having to make the move themselves. Which brings us to the tale of two Wall Street investment bankers. Banker number one is Long Pham. He first considered leaving Bank of America this spring. A mentor suggested Dubai, which was becoming a major financial services hub.
I said, that sounds intriguing, but I don't know Arabic. And he said, it doesn't matter. 80% of the people in that town don't speak Arabic.
Not long after, Pham had a phone interview with a Dubai investment firm and landed the job, sight unseen. Now he works in an office with a stunning view of Dubai's over-the-top architecture. Banker number two is Desi Dunker. He didn't start looking for a new job until this summer, after he was laid off by Goldman Sachs. His first phone interview with a major Dubai fund was
going great, except when they started talking about my interest in the Middle East.
And Dunker said he had no experience in this region.
Then that was when the tone of the interview changed. And that was when I realized that to make my story much more credible, I had to be here.
So Dunker dipped into his severance package to fly here and stay in hotels while he looked for jobs. He's had interviews with his top two choices, but no offers yet. Zita Yarwood is a Dubai-based recruiter. She says the job market here has gotten so competitive, candidates who once were shoo-ins now have a hard time getting their resumes noticed.
And you go through your file and you've got maybe two or three guys with obviously different names, but exactly the same experience, exactly the same company. So not only are they sort of competing against their competitors, they're competing against their colleagues.
Yarwood says experience doing business with emerging markets will differentiate a candidate from the pack. And some language skills wouldn't hurt either. In Dubai, I'm Kelly McEvers for Marketplace.
We have much more coverage of the financial crisis fallout online at our website, marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.
American Public Media.